He hit the power switch. Dr. Huth raised his arms over his head and spread his gauntleted fingers. The battlesuit visor reacted infinitely faster than eyes and brain. Before the latter could even begin to register the blast of energy, the helmet's lens went opaque. The X-ray pulse lasted 1 minute, and in theory at least, blasted the suit's external surfaces clean of all living matter. If it worked, they would depart this replica Earth without Scourge stowaways. After his visor cleared, Dr. Huth exited the tunnel's rear and passed through to a second force field, the smaller dome within a dome that enclosed the jump zone. Beyond the nested containment fields, a pitched one-sided battle raged. Without the battlesuit's optical enhancements, the seemingly endless legions of attackers were invisible. All that could be seen of them with the naked eye were the corkscrewing aerial wakes they left when passing through smoke or fog or rain. And perhaps that was a blessing in disguise. In his helmet's view screen, they flew, they floated, they slithered. They massed in thin air like the glowing ghosts of 6-foot-long slime eels. The specter-like entity seemed unaffected by planetary gravity, a phenomenon that sorely baffled Dr. Huth. It appeared that although they existed in the current dimension, wreaking havoc as they swarmed and killed, they were somehow not fully of it. Great luminous blotches of color splashed high on the flanks of the outermost containment dome. Liquid dripped down the impenetrable curtain in rivulets of brilliant lime green. Hot blood, as seen in infrared. The gouts of gore splattered the surface of the force field, hung there for an instant, then were gone, vaporized as the barrier shrugged off the insult. Similar slaughter was raining down upon the planet's entire surface, upon living creatures even less prepared to defend themselves. Megadeth. It had followed their leap from the 10th Earth to the 11th, and now from the 11th to the 12th, seemingly homing on the chemistry of their blood and marrow, using them not only for transport, but also as guides to suitable targets, to like worlds, primed for annihilation. Working frantically in the 18 to 21 day windows of calm between rematerialization and all hell breaking loose, Dr. Huth had gathered a scant handful of facts. It appeared that the creatures first entered the bodies of their hosts as microscopic entities, drawn into the lungs with breath, into the stomach with food and water, and into the soft tissue through breaks in the skin. Like bacterial endospores, their incredibly tough shell-like outer covering protected them from the hazards of deep space and presumably those of the true void. Like endospores, these entities had a lethality threshold. Under strictly controlled laboratory conditions, Dr. Huth destroyed them with direct heat in excess of 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit and with maximum power X-ray exposure. The direct heat method was not applicable in the real world. Those temperatures would have flash-cooked the warriors in their battle suits. Whether the X-ray radiation level and coverage in the sterilization chamber was sufficient to cleanse them of all microscopic contamination was an open question. Even more unsettling, he hadn't discovered a way to kill fully matured entities after they burst out of their living hosts. It seemed that once they attained quasi-spectral form, they were immune to the effects of radiation, laser, gunshot, explosive, fire, and poison. They were as untouchable and as insubstantial as they were insatiable for living victims. Dr. Huth needed additional time to unravel the mystery, and once again, time had run out. He glanced down the visor screen's right-hand display, pausing for a second at the function tab he wanted to initiate. The software's graphic retinal interface, GRI, automatically shifted the view mode from infrared to normal. The commander's voice came through the comlink.
Status report. All systems online. We're ready to initiate jump on your order. Close ranks.
At the center of the jump zone, Dr. Huth and the black-helmeted warriors formed up in a tight circle facing one another. Battle suits shoulder to shoulder. On the ringside opposite him, a visored cloaked Dr. Huth gazed upon milk-white skin, cascading black curls, a full-lipped mouth, strong chin, and even through the visor's polarizing tint, eyes the color of blue ice. For a split second, the white coat felt a chill of recognition. Under extreme stress in his most vulnerable moments, those eyes, that uncanny resemblance, had the power to transport him to the land of recurring nightmares, of savage punishments. And for the thousandth time, Dr. Huth came face to face with the possibility that a grievous fundamental error had been made. an indelible mistake. The being that stood opposite him had been assembled, egg and sperm, in a petri dish, grown in the belly of an unwilling slave surrogate mother, genetically enhanced and artificially matured, on worlds pulled apart at their seams. Aurel Otis Trask had known 8 different versions of Earth in her short lifetime, all of them endgame catastrophes. The combination of that unique experience and her altered DNA had made Aurel harder than vanadium steel, harder than either of her gene donors. Aurel's female component had been harvested from Dreda Otis Trask, the former CEO of Omnico, board member of 5, the ruling conglomerate of Dr. Huth's overpopulated, overexploited Earth. Ever the visionary, when Dreda had realized that human life was on its last legs, that there was no hope for her world, she had used Level 4 bioengineering technology to remake herself and create a cadre of genetically enhanced warriors, creatures fit to jump universes and conquer entire planets, starting with Shadow World. After Dreda's horrible demise on the 11th Earth, Aurel Otis Trask had inherited command of the expedition and the responsibility of leading it out of its desperate plight. Her plan was to jump back to where the Odyssey had begun, back to Shadow World. This in order to gain time to repower their nuke batteries and recover the gear left at Slake City, and if the Spectre still followed, to find a way to kill them or leave them behind once and for all. Dr. Huth ran the tip of his tongue over the empty sockets formerly occupied by his front teeth. Deathlands was a place he had hoped never to see again. Within hours of his initial arrival there, he had been set upon, robbed of all his possessions, beaten, and mutilated. Though the memory of that traumatic event remained fresh, its irony was lost on him. In a long and storied scientific career, he had never once worried about the consequences of his own actions on the powerless. As a young white coat, then as director of the Totality Concepts Transreality Program, he had always looked for the big picture. The fate of the tens of billions left to starve on his native Earth after it had been scraped clean of sustenance hadn't troubled him. He had seen firsthand what the Scourge could do, but he wasn't concerned about the fate of the Shadow Worlders either. In his experience, other people's suffering was the price of knowledge. And at that price, it was always a bargain.
Initiate the sequence.
Counting down from 30. Prepare for jump.
As Dr. Huth watched the red digits fall on the lower edge of his visor's faceplate, all he could think about were the consequences of failure. If there wasn't enough power for the jump, he was going to slowly suffocate inside the ill-fitting armor. The horror and the unfairness of that fate unmanned him. His lower lip began to quiver, and his eyes welled up with scalding tears. There were so many things yet to do, so many discoveries yet to be made, accolades that would be denied him. When the scrolling numbers hit 0, the double force fields imploded, and the suddenly expanded perspective seared an image deep into the recesses of his brain. Spectres zipped through the air, crisscrossing like flying javelins, streaks of luminous green moving faster than the eye could follow. Tightly packed masses of them writhed ecstatically above the mounds of ruptured corpses that clogged the city's plaza. Except for the spectres, everything that he could see, for as far as he could see, was dead. Then the jump machine re-engaged, and the air overhead began to shimmer, then spin. It morphed into a vortex, flecked with glittering points of light. As the tornado whirled faster, the light from within grew brighter and brighter. Staggered by the blasting wind, Dr. Huth looked across the ring and realized the commander was staring at him. On the cusp of their destruction, Aurel Otis Trask was smiling. A narrow seam, a fissure without bottom, divided the center of their warrior circle, gaping wider and wider like a hungry maw. Once the passage between realities was established, all struggle was futile. The forces unleashed wouldn't be denied. The ground beneath Dr. Huth's boots dematerialized, and he somersaulted into the nothingness on the heels of the daughter of Ryan Carter.